This week on the show, monetize your 15 minutes of fame. Will you download, mix, and burn? And 10 lessons from the 2009 box office, right here on This Week in Media, number 149. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to This Week in Media. And I'm Alex Lindsay, sitting in for Daisy Whitney, who is actually on the air. She's just not in the studio. Hi, Daisy.
Hello, Alex. I can see you from afar. This is very exciting.
Too far away.
I know. Thank you for permitting me to do this remotely. It's my son's first day of school today. Not in kindergarten. He's in third grade now. But so I wanted to be kind of close to the school and be able to pick him up on time and all of that important parental stuff. So.
You just pick them up whenever you feel like it.
Yeah, generally they're fine. No, well, he's been in camp most of the summer, so I've had a little bit more flexibility when I've been up at the cottage. So once I get into kind of the regular schedule now, I should be able to get back up there and kind of get everything situated with various pickups. So
very good.
I will be back, rest assured, because I do prefer the studio as well.
Excellent. And also on the line, Tim Street. Hey, Tim. How's it going?
Hey, Alex. Hey, Daisy. How are you guys?
And is this your home office?
No, I'm actually at my office in Pasadena. Got the air conditioning working today, so
very exciting.
It's hot. We have fires going on, so you don't want to have windows open. It's not nice.
Are you guys talking about me?
No.
I thought you were talking about my little technical snafu.
Not at all. And so
we'll
also
keep that secret.
And also on the line, not anymore.
Oh, well.
And also on the line, we have David Cohen from spot.us. Hi, David. Oh, we lost him. And we were going to have, let's restate that we were going to have David Cohen, but we're going to reschedule him for another day. And we had a little bit of connection issues with David. He was here like literally 2 seconds before I hit the edit to him. So we're just going to move on. And it'll be just the three of us. And we're going to kind of have a little bit of chat. So first up, we have YouTube to monetize your 15 minutes of fame. So this is on the New York Times. And it says, you no longer need to be a YouTube partner to get ad money. YouTube will track popularity and the viral nature of videos to start including ads if your video takes off and pay you. So the JK wedding dance could have paid under the scenario, maybe even paid for the entire wedding. Now when you upload the video to YouTube that accumulates a lot of views, they may invite you to monetize that video and start earning revenue from it. So that's according to Shanaz Zak, the product manager, who wrote it on the YouTube blog. What do you guys think, Tim?
I think this is great. I think this is awesome. I think the one thing that I would love to see added is the thing that Rever used to do, where they would shave off 10% of their earnings, they'd shave off 10% of your earnings, and they'd give that 20% to a third party who would then embed that video on their site. I think if YouTube did this, we'd really see an increase in the monetization of online video. But I think this is a huge step. I think it's great. I'm really excited about it because there are a lot of people out there that create a video, it goes viral, and then they can't monetize it to go do another video. And this way, if they do get lucky and they do create something that's emotionally contagious and gets spread around the world, they're going to make some money, and then they can take that money and go make another one if they want, or they can just, you know, put it away for college.
Daisy?
Just probably a better use of it. I never had a problem with people, sort of random one-time creators, not getting paid. Because I think that, and we might have talked about this in a past episode. It might have been with Tim. It might have been with Kevin Nolte. I'm not sure who said it. But we have to remember that these people are getting to use the bandwidth for free. They're getting the exposure for free. So it's not as if creators like the JK wedding folks, the bride and groom, weren't getting anything out of it. I mean, they definitely got a lot out of it before. But that being said, I think from a business point of view, it's smart for YouTube. And I think every week it seems as if we see YouTube do some new thing, implement some new strategy or whatever it is to try to make money. And I think we all of us in the new media business and in the online video business want to see YouTube make money. Because if YouTube fails, it's kind of a reflection, on the whole industry, frankly. So I think we all want to see YouTube succeed. So anything like this that is going to help any type of creator, I think will ultimately have a trickle effect, a ripple effect for all of us. So good news.
Well, and I think I'm excited about it as a content creator. It's something that we're interested in. We have lots of little viral video, well, not viral video, but just fun videos that we want to do. And it would be great to know that if we went down that path, that we'd actually be able to hopefully make some money. Now, usually we're not basing our business model on the idea that we make any ad revenue. So for us, it's a little bit of gravy, but it's gravy that we would like to add to our turkey. So anyway, also in the news, we have studios to offer DVD downloads. So this is Paramount Pictures, Sony Pictures, Warner's, and Lionsgate will begin to offer first movie downloads that can be burned to disc using virtually any DVD or Blu-ray disc burner for playback on a broad range of devices already in millions of consumer homes. This is according to Variety.com. Daisy, what's your take on this?
I hate plastic. Don't
exactly.
You? I have zero interest in this personally. I mean, it's, you know, I don't want to own anything. I don't want to have to burn anything onto anything else. I mean, I guess it's theoretically a good thing, but I think ultimately what consumers are going to want is just more of digital formats being available. But I know I probably don't necessarily represent the majority in that regard. And I know a lot of listeners will probably write to me and say, well, I love my Blu-ray. I love my new, you know, high-def DVD player or whatever it is. This is a good thing. So I think when you take a broader point of view, I think it's a good sign in terms of openness on the part of the movie studios. And we don't always see that.
Well, here's the question I have for you, though, how does it compete, or does it really make a difference? I guess this is so that you can download it and buy it, right? So you could buy the movie and download it and then burn it to a DVD.
I guess that's
what it's designed to do, right? And the thing is the question is, how is this distinguished? And Tim, I'm going to ask you this real quick. How does this distinguish itself from what Amazon's allowing you to do with Unbox or what Apple's allowing you to do with iTunes?
I think the big way that this distinguishes itself is that the studios are now collecting the customers. And so they're going to have the email addresses to market to, and they're going to be selling directly to the consumer. It creates some interesting antitrust issues that existed until the laws were changed, and maybe we'll see the laws change back, but they're cutting out Amazon, they're cutting out iTunes, they're cutting out Redbox.
Well, I guess my question is, though, will they cut out those things, or will this be just another of a long line of ideas that the studios have come up with that have just been a failure?
Well, it may be too little too late, but there's still a lot of people out there that love DVDs, love having DVDs, and would really like the idea. I mean, I think for us, 5 years ago would have been the time to do this, but we live in that bubble. And, I think there are a lot of people out there that are going to think this is a great idea and they're going to do it.
And
it'll allow the studios to really attack Netflix.
Now, Daisy, do you think that we're moving away from personal ownership of media at all? I mean, I know that for me, one of the things that I'm dealing with is that I finally moved Netflix from three. I had eight. I had the eight setting for a while with Netflix because I like to watch lots of stuff and I like lots of stuff available. I went down to three, and then this weekend I actually dropped to one because I realized the only way that I get Netflix now is through a Roku, the little Roku controller that I have at home, and I have like my Netflix InstaQueue, which I just spend about an hour every Sunday just kind of updating all these new stuff that I want. And I've got 200 things there that I can choose from, and of those, there are lots of TV series that I can go to. And the thing is that I'm left with, I don't really buy DVDs or buy media. I mean, I buy music, but I don't really buy movies anymore. I'm not downloading them illegally. I just don't need to own them. I just watch them when I want to watch them.
No, I completely agree with you. I mean, the only movie that I currently want to own is Aladdin, and I can't actually find it because you know how Disney has its every 10-year release strategy for DVDs, which actually is probably brilliant because it really truly does create demand. But my kids and I love that movie, and we wind up having to rent it because there's very few places. I mean, I haven't done a completely thorough scanning of the webosphere to see where exactly I might find it online.
Not that she's bitter.
You might rent it and then lose it. Wouldn't that be a way to own it, kind of?
Right. Yes. No, you're right. I mean, what would it cost me? $20? It really wouldn't be that expensive.
So just sue me.
It would be.
I lost it. I will pay for it now. Here is the money for the DVD that I lost.
But other than that, I don't see a need personally to own things anymore. But that's also, going back to what we were talking about before, I mean, I don't necessarily represent the norm. I don't like clutter. I don't like having a lot of things. I mean, when I just transferred to a new operating system, I actually lost some digital files on my iTunes as TV shows, some old episodes, and even some new episodes of Burn Notice that I hadn't yet seen. And I just said, what can I do about it? You know, I'm not going to get upset because I lost a couple episodes of a TV show. So there are more important things to get upset about. Of course, now I'm kind of deflating the whole purpose of our show, which is we should be inflamed about the media business. And we are.
Okay, now
but not about this.
Now, moving on, I have a question for you, our e-reader expert, Daisy Whitney. Sony intros an e-reader. It's a 3G, and it's bringing it to libraries. The Reader Daily Edition, one of the three new Sony e-readers introed in the last few weeks, will be released in December for $399. This is according to Macworld. The company has also announced enhancements to the quote-unquote ecosystem for its reader devices to help expand the reach of ebooks that will work with Sony Reader devices for books, magazine, and for books, newspapers, and magazines in portrait or landscape mode. What do you think, Daisy?
Well, I think the problem is that Sony just doesn't have as many books as Amazon, unfortunately. And I think that's going to continue to. I mean, I think what we're going to encounter here in this e-reader world is it's the same thing that happened in the music player world. It's going to be very hard for anybody to compete. I know that Alex, we're holding out hope in this tablet, and I think that will be very, very attractive to Mac fans and to Apple people. But obviously, that's not everybody. So I
right,
think
because
Amazon,
just to, as devil's advocate here, mm-hmm. because not very many PC users use iPods or iPhones, right?
I don't think that's the reason. I think. Oh, but don't you sound so smart? But I think that Amazon does have a lead in this regard. I don't think that the Sony is as compelling a proposition. I don't think the pricing is similar. I don't think they will be able to compete as effectively as Amazon can on pricing. You have a bit of a Walmart situation, for better or for worse, that Amazon is going to be able to have everyone under its control. And I also think that, you know, a lot of the early converts are very passionate about the Kindle. I mean, people like myself. And you know that you have to keep that word of mouth is going to count for something. But no, Alex, I just don't see a lot of people who have been holding out are holding out specifically for the Apple reader. I think that people who are holding out on buying a reader are those who still believe in the notion of holding a book and the look and feel of a book. I don't think it is an allegiance to any particular device.
Oh, no, I don't
device.
Think so either. Here's the question before we get to the Apple reader. Tim, do you think that Sony risks being an also-ran between what looks like a huge collision between Amazon and Apple?
You know, it's interesting. I'm wondering if, you know, they're going to come out with the Reed Man, because they had that Walkman thing that did so well so many years. And I don't know. I'm down to two devices. I've got a laptop and an iPhone. It would be great if I could get down to one device, you know, and not have to carry two things around. I mean, for the longest time, it was three things. It was a phone and an iPod and a laptop. And now I'm down to two, and I love it. But I'm willing to go one more step. And if that one more step can be my phone, my laptop, and my cell phone somehow, some way, you know, I don't know if that's going to happen, but that would be great. And if I can make it an e-reader too, I'm in.
Well, and that's the and that gets us to the next story, which of course is this. This was on Macworld.com. It said, this is a, the device could be, this is the Apple tablet, the mythical Apple tablet that that people keep on talking about. Now, when we talk about this, it's getting a lot of press, but we have to remember this is what happened with the iPhone, is suddenly there was the mythical phone that Apple was working on, and everyone was building up towards it, and then everyone was like, it's never going to go anywhere, and now it's approaching 20% of the market, and so we need to pay attention to this to some degree when we talk about this stuff. And I personally think we need to pay attention to it when we talk about media distribution in general. I think this is, but specifically to books, this is according to Macworld. The device could be a natural-born book reader, ready to compete with Amazon, Sony, and soon Barnes & Noble. In fact, complete may be too soft a term. Or compete maybe too soft a term. Apple could easily clean its opponent's clock, according to Macworld, and it could dominate the e-books as much as it conquered e-music. Now, the question is, and this is for you, Tim, first, and then Daisy. The issue is that what Apple brings to it, I think, and my question for you is: do you think this is the case? Is the juggernaut is really iTunes, and then also color and video? Does that really give them an edge that the other users don't have?
I continue to believe that there are distinct worlds. I have no interest whatsoever in hacking into my Kindle and ever enabling the Kindle or any e-reader to have email access. Email is a necessary evil and a wonderful evil. It has allowed us to do so very many things. But when I'm reading, I'm reading. And I don't want to be distracted by an email because it kind of takes you out of the experience. So I think a lot of people who will buy the Kindle are people who are passionate about books. And that's, that's why they're doing it, because they want to be able to buy the books in a cheaper fashion. They want to be able to have as many books as possible with them when they travel. And they don't want to be distracted by email or the internet or music necessarily. I truly do believe that there is an important separation there. So I think all of those other features don't matter so much to the e-reader market.
So, but here's the question is there enough people who only care about books who are also willing to give up paper to make that competitive against people who want something that just does everything? And now our next story here, of course, is the 10 lessons of the 2009 box office. So this is this was on time.com, and I just thought it was a great article, and evidently I've heard rumors that Daisy Whitney read the entire article.
I read the whole thing.
She's not really known as a reader.
No. Actually, I'm not really known as a nonfiction reader. So
which is funny, because I don't read fiction. That's for movies. So this is where these two worlds come together. So the first lesson is skip the stars. And so this is talking about number one rule for nearly 90 years was to pay attention to all these stars. And what we saw over this break is big star vehicles. That's what we call it in the business, a vehicle. It's not even a movie anymore. It's just a Brad Pitt vehicle. And in this case, a Will Ferrell and Adam Sandler vehicles evidently crashed. They didn't actually make it to their destination in one piece. And I'm going to kind of go through these quickly, then we'll go back and cover them. Otherwise, we'll take the rest of the show talking about it. Number two was get animated. Animation obviously is a pretty surefire way to make money right now. Spend money to make money, which is of course spend some big bucks on stuff that generally turns out. Ignore the grown-ups, which I've been doing since I was 12. Now I'm trying to reverse that with my kids. Don't forget the women. Ignore the grown-ups, but don't forget the women. I guess that's I don't really know what to do with that. And then we also have Judd Apatow. So this was his movie didn't do very well, but people who were doing many things like it, did really well. It said send the get well card to indies. The idea was that there wasn't that many indie films that did very well. Send in dinosaurs, which dinosaurs are pretty much a surefire way to make money. Number nine was to make sequels and prequels, but that's been kind of a rule for a long time, right? And finally, wow the fans on Friday. So going through all of those, what would you say are the most important ones, or what are the ones that jumped out at you, Tim?
Well, it's interesting for me. When I hear that list, it's really a sign of the times. You know, ignore the adults. Well, adult issues are very serious, and right now we're going through a serious time. There's two wars going on. There's a recession going on. People are losing their houses. You don't want any serious fare. And I think that's the biggest lesson from these 10 lessons is that you need to create emotionally engaging content that is entertaining in a way that lets people escape and forget their problems.
Which that goes, you know, that kind of goes to the animation. It goes to the
all of them to me. Yeah.
How about you, Daisy? What jumped out for you?
Well, I think it is so important. I mean, as a parent, I think it really is so important to include the kids. I mean, that's one of the lessons clearly that was learned this summer. I mean, if you ask anybody who has kids, you know, sort of whatever age, chances are the last movie, I mean, probably up until they become teenagers and really truly go to movies by themselves, is you want something that you can take the family to. I mean, so definitely you've got a large range of people who have young children and they're not going to go see Johnny Depp. I even tried to convince my, you know, my older child, my third grader, to go see Julie and Julia last week. I thought, well, you know, it's about cooking and it might be kind of fun. And he had zero interest. There was no way he was going to see that movie, even though it's more on the lighthearted side. But I think about, you know, when I go to the movies too, and Tim, I couldn't agree with you more. When my husband and I were scrolling through iTunes the other night to see what to rent, I mean, it just all looks so heavy and depressing. I'm telling you, if it doesn't have teenagers or high school or, you know, or talking animals in it, yeah, I want to escape when I go to the movies. And I think this list also speaks, obviously, you know, to the power of a franchise. And unfortunately, it's just really, really hard if there's not something that consumers can already glom onto. Kind of the way it's always been, right?
Well, one question I have for you, though, is that I do think it's changed a little bit, because I know that for me, and tell me if this is the same for you or not, you know, we have a pretty big screen at home, and I've got a pretty good sound system, and it all works out pretty well. I really look at stuff of, do I really need to see this on a big screen? And so if it's something that, and when I say a big screen, I mean, do I really need to see it on a full theater environment? And if I don't, I'm just gonna, you know, I'm waiting for it to show up on Comcast On Demand or my Roku or, you know, or iTunes. I mean, those are the kind of things that I'm going to wait for. And so, like, for instance, I didn't go to see King of Corn in the theater because I didn't really think it probably needed to be seen on a big screen. And it turned out it probably didn't, but it was a great movie. But I saw it at home, which is a documentary, by the way, on how everything we eat is made of corn. So anyway, which is actually kind of enjoyable. Anyway, and I ate lots of corn while watching it. And anyway, so in many different forms, you know. But this decision process now I think has changed as we have HD at home, as we have HD TVs, big HD TVs that are getting inexpensive. I think a lot of people might be making this decision where indies are having trouble. When you have a big animated flick that is in 3D, when you have big effects films that are in 3D in IMAX, when you have a lot of stuff, that those are the movies that I go to. I make sure that I go to these really, really big blockbusters because, you know, I'm only going to get to see them once in the theater, and then after that I'm going to watch it on a smaller screen, and I kind of want to have that experience. Is it getting to the point where you really have to create that experience to you know, really have a successful business model, Tim?
No, I'm going to jump in for a sec, Tim, and then I'll let you go. I don't think that's the case. I think that again, it all comes down to an individual experience. And I think there are a lot of people who will feel the same way that you do. But I make decisions to see my movies kind of based a little bit on instant gratification. I saw The Time Traveler's Wife, even though I knew it had gotten very poor reviews. And frankly, it deserved all of those reviews. It was a very badly done movie for a lot of reasons. But I loved the book. I adored the book. And for that reason, I had just a natural curiosity to see it in the theaters. I said, look, I'm not afraid to have bad taste. I went to see The Ugly Truth too, another disappointing movie. But, you know, it was the same thing. Like, there was just something about it. It didn't have to do with seeing it with other people or seeing it on the big screen or the effects or whatever it was. It's just if there's a certain buzz about a movie going on or I have a feeling about one of the stars. I mean, look, I'm sure All About Steve is going to be a horrible movie, but I have a major crush on Bradley Cooper and I'm so over Hugh Jackman. So yeah, I'm probably going to see it in the theater. So I have to put that out there so Tim will stop talking about Hugh Jackman.
Tim?
She will never be over Hugh Jackman. I think that that Hollywood, the Big Six, have really paid close attention to this, and that's why we're seeing 3D.
Right.
They do realize that people are waiting. And since a big portion of their revenue has been coming from DVD and DVD is declining, they've had to reinvent themselves, and that's what the 3D is about. Last night, I borrowed a projector from a friend and projected the original Woodstock movie that I got from Netflix in my backyard on my neighbor's garage,
right.
and hooked up some speakers. It was great. I mean, I had an outdoor theater last night. Got to smell the fires and watch Woodstock. I felt like I was there.
That is awesome. Oh, and I know that like in my backyard, I am strongly considering a blow up screen because it'd be so much fun.
I thought
you
were gonna say doll.
No. I'm not thinking about dolls at all. No, but a big blow up screen that you could have a friends over and they make them and they're not that expensive, and it's a great way to you know just blow something up and then put up a projector and watch something at 150 inches with people sitting around smoking marshmallows at the same time. So, well, cooking marshmallows, probably not smoking them.
In
might be
smoking
something else. Yeah, exactly.
Is that what they call it now?
Yep. And so anyway, now moving on. We have the Are Pirates Vital to the Success of Old Media? So this is according to Ad Age. Historically, an easy way to stoke the ire of the major media executive was to start talking about the surge of peer-to-peer file distribution. Now, we do lots of research at the folks at Frank N. Magid Associates.
Magid. We're all pronouncing it differently.
Associates, somewhere there, you know, it's MIGID. Associates took the pulse, and they recently looked at Vooz, which Vooz used to be Azurious, or used to have the Azurious player, to find out of the habits of the average internet user. And it turns out that the Vooz user, which arguably might be downloading some stuff that is more P2P, or is P2P, I mean, that's what Vooz does, tends to own an HDTV more often. Will own an HDTV. It'll be new in the past 12 months. It'll be a bigger screen. It'll be more expensive. They'll have a next gen game console. A lot more will have a home theater. More will have a smartphone. More will have a Blu-ray player, and more will have a media center PC. So these folks are spending real money on at least the equipment, according to this. Is this something that the media industry has to pay attention to? Tim? No?
Absolutely not. They no way. Not a chance.
And know, don't check the ISP in Los Angeles to see if Tim's downloading any illegal movies.
What's interesting to me about the P2P play, I mean, now that Pirate Bay is, you know, officially shut down, whether or not it comes back or not, I don't know. But again, it seems like that Napster thing where you've got this community of people who really wants content, who's willing to break the law to get this content. Is there a way to embrace that community and grab hold of that community and utilize that community to market your wares to? Whether or not you feed them with marketing material or you feed them with the real thing, I think the P2P world is incredibly valuable to traditional media to get the word out about their stuff. And I sometimes wonder if movies officially get pirated to help that box office because it just gets them a media boost that they get a lot of free publicity out of.
If they've got a good piece of content, right?
And yeah,
that's
absolutely.
That's one of the challenges. And Daisy, what do you think?
Well, I've always agreed with Mark Cuban in this regard. I think it's a waste of time for studios to fight piracy. I mean, I think they should just take all of their, you know, I think the only useful time that media executives spend in the fight against piracy is in reaching out to pirates and letting them know where legally and free alternatives are. Because then you can at least support your ad business. I know that executives at Warner Brothers have done this where they see people, you know, they can kind of, I mean, it's a lot of work in the weeds, but if you see that there are a lot of sites that have your shows illegally, and if there's a way to kind of get in touch or post a note on a forum or whatever it is to say, hey, if you want to see this when it's first released on the WB.com or, you know, wherever it might be, then that is a smart strategy because then you can help support your core business. But I think actually fighting it with takedown notices and things like that is a complete waste of time. And all of that money should be spent on marketing instead because piracy is going to happen no matter what.
Well, and
it's a waste of time to fight it and only spend any energy on it when you can drive those viewers to legal alternatives that support your business.
You know, the one thing that I find interesting is I think I find more people that talking about when they're pirating stuff, a lot of times it isn't that they don't want to buy it. It's because it's out in the theater and they want to watch it at home. They sit there and they want to watch this movie at home, or they want to watch it between the time it was in the theater and now it's available on cable or DVD. And there's this kind of no man's land where there's no way to have. And of course, that was designed so that we could have lots of revenue streams and make lots of money. But the question is, is that actually driving it? Would they do better? And I know people are, the industry is afraid of day and date releases or any releases that are somewhere near that. But is that a strategy that they might have to give up?
Well, I would still go see. I think a day and date release is a smart idea. And I would still go to the theater because there's this thing called date night where it's a lot more fun if you have, I mean, there's some things that are more fun to do in your house, but certain parts of date night you want to do out of your house. You want to go to the theater. You want to actually sit in the theater. So if there was a movie that I could see at home versus in the actual theater and it was the same price or a small difference, I would still opt in a lot of cases to see it in the theater because of the experience and just getting out of your house.
Right. Tim?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's back to that experience thing, but you know, maybe if they had like massage chairs at the theater.
and cheese fries.
Yeah. It's the tough thing is going to be the cable industry and the satellite industry. There's so much money that's made in that window. And for a studio to give that up, it'll probably happen. But getting there, oof, it's going to hurt. A lot of people are going to get hurt.
Got it. Now we're going to have to, I think we're going to move on to, we have a blend tech, that we're looking at. This is the David Albright's. Is that correct, Daisy?
Yes. David Albright sent this in. I don't know a lot more about it than the rest of us, but I'm happy to introduce it. He said he was sending it in on behalf of a friend, right, David? That's okay. We'll do it for you anyway.
I have a friend that needs some advice.
He says he's going to be making some videos for a chiropractor in exchange for some chiropractic services. All the example videos that he sent me are pretty standard videos. Does your back hurt? Then you should see a chiropractor. I'm trying to figure out some more creative ideas for him. And I'd love to hear what you have on TWIM. And Tim, you're always terrific with ideas, but I want to weigh in on this first. I think that the biggest problem that chiropractors face, and I'll be totally blunt here, is that they have a reputation as being quacks. And I think that you need to have fun with that. That's what I will say, that when you're thinking about making videos, you got to put that out there because there are a lot of people who have some trepidations about going to see them in the first place because, you know, oh, they're manipulating my back. They could break my back. This is not a real doctor. It's this type of doctor or whatever. And if you have any doctor friends, they'll tell you they just kind of laugh at chiropractors. And I apologize if we have any chiropractor listeners. And if we do, I'm not talking about you personally. I'm just kind of putting it out there and just giving you the lay of the land. And look, a lot of people think blondes are stupid. Okay, fine. So we all have our things that we have to get over. So you need to acknowledge that there's sort of this natural hurdle to get over. And I think the way to do that is to kind of have fun with that somehow in the videos. You know, maybe have the first 30 seconds be, you know, if you go to a chiropractor, could this happen to you and have somebody's body animated and completely turned into a pretzel? And that's what most people think, or not most people, that's what some people think could happen when you see a chiropractor. But then you kind of debunk that myth. You say, well, this actually isn't going to happen because here's what we do and here's how it works. It's just one of those branches of medicine that's misunderstood. And acknowledge from the get-go that it is in a fun way and then debunk it.
Tim?
I totally agree with Daisy on this one. Yeah, there's a lot of fun that you can have with that and embrace that and really play on the emotions that people already have connected to that. I have an acquaintance on Twitter. His Twitter handle is Chiropractic, and he runs a website where he blogs about anything chiropractic. And one of the things he did was when Beyonce slipped and fell on stage and it was recorded in an online video, he blogged about that. He blogs about anything that's in the news, and that gets people coming to his site. And then he's made a business model out of it by selling off links to local chiropractors in different cities around the world. So they pay a monthly fee to get to that, to have that link for a month. And I think if you look into anything that might call for a chiropractor and somehow play with that. You know, if at that time when Beyonce had slipped and fallen, if you'd have done a spoof video on that to promote your chiropractic service, I think you would have got a lot of views and you would have got a lot of traction to your website.
Yeah, and I, you know, as someone who actually goes to a chiropractor, fairly often. Well, my back is a little twitchy, and
are you addicted?
You know, no, I'm not. I don't go. It's not like I go every week. I go, you know, I go when things feel like they're really tight, and so so that's usually when I will go. There's an empty chair there, and so but when my back is tight, or I pulled it, or I've done something funky with it, it's usually the care that I want to get. I had a lot of back injuries when I was young, and nothing worked except for a chiropractor. I mean, I spent 5 years before I went to a chiropractor because I was afraid of that they were quacks. and then after that, I was a true believer. And so, and there's nothing better than having your neck cracked. That's all I got to say. It's my favorite part of the whole thing. So, I think that people understanding what it's actually doing or what it's designed to do, I think is important for people to understand. I think finding ways to illustrate what the science is or, you know, what the assumptions are behind what they're doing, I think is important for people to understand and make it more science-like. And
it would be more fun to make fun of the science, though.
It would be, but I don't, that might be effective for some. For me, it wouldn't be. I kind of want to know why. I always want to know why everything's happening. So, you know, why are we doing this? Why is my leg up this way and this way? And what does it do? And, you know, all that stuff. That's what gets me interested. And I found that very effective. I went to an ophthalmologist who had all the stuff about the eyes, which I don't know if they should really show in the main room. It's kind of gross. But they were talking about, you know, how all these different surgeries and how different things and how, you know, what is nearsighted versus farsighted. And they'd handled like a lot of things that you would normally ask your optometrist or ophthalmologist about. And I found that to be fascinating. And they spent a lot of money on that because it was some really good video. But I think that made it a lot more interesting. And for some reason, I felt like they knew more when I got there because I had watched that video, and I have no idea why. They just seemed smarter after that. So you know, having people just illustrating what's going on to me would be the thing that I was most interested in. Anyway, we're gonna wrap this one up. But a couple things that we have here. We've got some upcoming events coming into. In the process, we've got this is GigaOM Mobilize 09 is going to be September 10th at the Mission Bay Conference Center. The Video Camp SF is happening in, as you may guess, San Francisco, and that is October 16th through the 17th at the same time, almost exactly the same time. So you're gonna have to pick between which one you want to go to. Is Blog World Expo? Are you guys going to Blog World?
Yes, I will be speaking there.
Tim's speaking. And I am not going because no one asked me.
No one asked you to speak. Tim, what are you going to be talking about there?
I only go to where things...
I'm going to be talking about online video, if you can imagine that.
Really?
Wow.
About marketing your online videos. And then I'm also going to be talking about video on the iPhone, in the iPhone apps.
Fantastic. Which is, I think... pretty exciting. And also one that's not that I didn't mention that I just want to make sure to mention is there is going to be and this is going to have some video and some media and so on and so forth, is Barcamp Africa. And that's important to me. So, of course, I had to mention it. It's on the 10th of October, and we don't have the date yet. It's still being put together. But I'm not doing it, but I'm were involved. We're hoping to do a bunch of video streaming from it. It's going to talk a lot about media in Africa. And last year it was at Google. And this year, I'm not sure where it's going to be, but we'll give people more information. But it might be a date. It's a Saturday that you might want to put out there on the 10th to check that out. So before we disappear, Tim, where can people find you?
One Tim Street on Twitter or onetimstreet.com.
And Daisy.
You can find me at daisywhitney.com, where you can see the New Media Minute and links to other things that I do. And also on the topic of events, I've talked about before, I'm doing conference programming for iMedia. So I'm programming the Breakthrough Summit in late October. And we're really centered on, that's going to be in the Las Vegas area. We're really centered on brands and agencies and who's doing the breakout stuff. So anybody is free to contact me about that. I can get more info if you're interested.
Fantastic. Thanks. This mess that you have been listening to is This Week in Media. We are over and out.